Okay, we're going to call the meeting to order, the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee. Welcome members to the committee. Today we're going to have public testimony on the governor's recommendations for the budget. First, we're going to ask Todd Otis and Susie Brown to come up to the table. He'll be the first to testify. I understand we do have a forum, and so we're going to do the minutes for February 3rd. Let's see, Representative Downey.
Move approval of the minutes for February 3rd.
Okay, so moved. Representative Downey moves approval of the minutes for February 3rd. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes for February 3rd are approved. Thank you. That members, today we will have testimony on the governor's budget proposal on next Tuesday. We will travel for a site visit to New Horizons Academy, and we'll have more details about that in terms of carpooling and so forth. But they have both allowances and scholarships there, so we'll be able to visit, see the facility, and ask more questions about that. So good, good. Well, we will proceed. Ms. Brown, are you ready to start with your testimony?
Thanks, I am.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Susie Brown, and I'm the Executive Director of Child Care Works. Child Care Works is an advocacy organization that whose mission is to achieve and sustain high-quality, affordable child care for all of the families of Minnesota. I'd like to tell you that I grew up in Lake St. Clair Beach when I was three. It's a small community in Washington County, and Chutes and Ladders
So you're following the committee protocol is where did you grow up when you were three and your favorite game. Okay. Well, thank you for mentioning that.
You're welcome. At Child Care Works, we use strategies that include advocacy, organizing, and public education in order to achieve our mission. And we work closely in coalition with many other child care providers, parents, and other advocacy groups, many of whom you've heard from in this room, in order to ensure that Minnesota can have a child care system that works to provide the care and education needs for all of Minnesota's children and families from birth to school age care. As a staff member of Child Care Works and with Jim Carlson, another staff member, and our board, we'd like to offer our service to you this session as people who can provide information about the child care system and the impact of cuts and ideas about how to improve the quality system in Minnesota. We think that an optimal child care system in Minnesota will focus on three components, and those include access, affordability, and quality. We know that those three areas, access, affordability, and quality, are all critically important components and should be considered as complementary in a care system that serves families and children well. We hope that you consider these components and their interconnectedness as you work toward improving the child care system and early education system for Minnesota's younger citizens. Today we know, and we've heard from local and national experts, and we heard at the Early Childhood Summit last week, that investments in early childhood care and education offer significant public and private returns, and that the strategic use of resources in this area will help both families with their care needs as they work, and will help move Minnesota towards its goal of having all children prepared for kindergarten. At Child Care Works, we're strong supporters of the state's school readiness goals, and we know that parents need child care while they work, particularly in these economic times. Child care is uniquely positioned to provide parents what they need in participating in the workforce, as well as preparing Minnesota's children to become successful learners and ultimately our workforce in the state. Just briefly, I'll comment on the governor's budget cuts, or its budget proposal, and we have a couple of areas of concern that we'd like to offer to you. In particular, we'd like to highlight the fact that cuts in provider reimbursement rates reduces access for some families and increases in parent copays reduce affordability. And back to the beginning, our key components that we believe are important to consider as interconnected in the child care system include access, affordability, and quality. And we're concerned that if we reduce access for some families, or if we reduce affordability, that will have the effect of reducing quality options for some families. We also want to call your attention to the fact that there's language in the governor's budget proposal that talks about surplus, and we want to make sure that it's crystal clear to the members of this committee that there isn't a surplus in the child care assistance fund, but that in fact there are 7,000 families who are waiting for child care on the waiting list. In this time of increased emphasis on quality care and education for children, anything that might reduce quality options for children should be avoided. And while we understand the difficult nature of the state budget deficit and the difficult decisions that you all are facing, we would like to continue to work toward access, affordability, and quality, and hope that we can join you in doing so for Minnesota's children. Thanks.
Thank you. We have a question. Representative Breiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Brown, I had was complaining at an earlier meeting about this child care money, basic sliding fee child care money being taken and spent elsewhere and so forth, and I was informed by the lobbyist for Child Care Works that there one of the reasons that the money could be taken is that over the state there's all this unused money, and that's why it's sitting there not being used. And that also I heard that one of the counties I represent, Hennepin County, was one of the bigger not users of money. But I just checked with them, and they said because of the fear of spending over and having to go into the property taxes, that they had to cut it as close as possible, and that did represent $530,000. But they spent 98.5% of what they were given or what they could spend, and then this $530,000. And then now with such large amounts that they're dealing with, that was cutting it as close as they dared. But now their next allocation is smaller because they didn't spend it all. And so it just seems like, Madam Chair, this is a downward spiral. If you're spending as close as you can without going over, and then you get less because you're not spending it all, but yet you have to go on to property taxes if you don't spend it all, it seems like a good excuse for lowering basic sliding fee child care through no fault of the county. I wonder if Ms. Brown could comment on that and if you would have any solutions to that problem.
Ms. Brown?
Madam Chair and Representative Growling, it's a really technical issue that it sounds like it plays out very differently in the different counties, and I know that Hennepin County is here if you need to hear from them directly. I guess that my concern and the concern of Child Care Works is that just because there's a technical shift in the way the money is allocated and then reallocated at the end, we hope that that's not seen as extra money that's not needed by families. We know that that's been done in the past and that there could be proposals for that now, and that, in fact, we want committee members to know that there are 7,000 families in Minnesota who are waiting for care, and we hope that because of the technical nature of how this money moves around, we hope that that money doesn't go away because it appears that counties are underspending. It would be really best if somebody who worked for a county or understood the technicalities of how this money moves could talk to this directly if you have really detailed questions about it.
Sure, I see you've got a full agenda, so I won't pursue it now, but maybe it is something we need to address because it seems to be a very bad trend for the amount of money that's available for this, which is so important, and there's so many waiting lists, but yet this technicality is getting in the way of families being served when the money is even there.
Representative Greiling, I think it's a very good point, and as we talked about, and even the governor's budget, they are spending the underspending money, which could be as much as $5 million this year, which, as you mentioned, could be used for basic sliding fee waiting lists, but winds up actually going to other places. So I think so noted, we need to talk about that more. And then as some of the testifiers, as you've heard this question, if you would like to clarify what happens in your county or your area, please do so.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Ms. Brown. Next we have a couple of out-of-town people, so we want them to come up next. Bridget Vicknell from St. Cloud, Sue Penite-Safsky, Children's Corner, Jessica Walker, Molly, should have gotten your names ahead of time, Zolos, and Carol Hitchertakos, if you'd like to come forward. Welcome to the committee. If you would like to start, and if the others want to come down and fill in or be in the chairs right behind there. Welcome to committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, my name is Bridget McNall. I am an assistant to my mother, who is a child care provider. She's unwilling to be here today because she is busy doing child care. Her name is Carol McNall, and she is licensed with the state. Cutting payment for assisted child care can and will be catastrophic for both family child care providers and the parents of the children. What's going to happen to the family who, in my care, who consists of three children and a single mother, who is going to school full-time?
I understand you're reading testimony, a letter from your mother?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Pretty much a letter from her.
Okay. Thank you.
She pays no copay because she has no income. She's doing everything humanly possible to get herself off of state aid, which is pretty much what state aid is for. She goes without things most of us take for granted. She uses city transportation and goes to the food shelf. She can't afford new clothes, so she buys used, and even then she buys them big so her kids can wear them as much as possible. They have no cable or internet, and she doesn't even have a computer to do her schoolwork on. This family comes unprepared without fail, and we have provided above and beyond what we are paid for. We gave a scarf to a six-year-old girl so that she could wait for the bus without freezing. We've given socks to a two-year-old boy so that he didn't have to wear socks that had holes as big as his heels. We meet these children's needs that are already being neglected because of lack of funds that the state has. If you cut these funds, the family will struggle even more with less than they have. At more rural family child cares like my mother's, we get less money for care in the first place. And according to this sheet that has been handed out, it's like three times as much as my mom gets. For the weekly infant rate, it's $107, not $310. And for the weekly toddler, it's $95, and the same for preschool. And then, it doesn't even have this on here, but before and after school care, my mom gets $50 a week for school-aged kids. And so, that's roughly $10 a day is what it is. The state doesn't pay the $10 a day for before and after school care. They choose to pay a little over $9 a day, and so we're already getting shorted money. It might not seem like a big deal, but we have four kids in our child care like this, and that's $20 a week, and that's a lot. If the funds get cut more than they already have, we won't be able to sustain our business, and we'll have to either not accept state-paid clients, or we'll go out of business. And so I urge you to vote against the proposition.
Thank you. Thank you for coming here today, and thank you for letting us know about your mom's child care and the situation. So we appreciate it. Thank you. Next, who would like to go next? Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Jerrica Walker. I am a single parent of three children. I have two that are currently in child care. One's a school ager and one is there full time. He's two. An increase in the child co-pays would put additional stress on my already strained budget. At this time, I live paycheck to paycheck on my budget, and there really is no room for extras. My rent, utilities, foods consume most of my paycheck, and the remaining goes to my child care and other family needs. Recently, my employer has reduced our increases. Our annual increases have been reduced from 4% a year to 1%. So it really doesn't leave me any extra room to plan ahead for emergencies, unexpected medical costs. I don't receive any other assistance from like medical assistance or food stamps or anything. I pay for the insurance comes from my employer, which was also increased this last year. So the 1% that I did get was all taken away by my increase of my insurance. excuse me. If my child care continues to increase and my pay doesn't increase, I may have to look outside of centers, family and friends, which puts me in a position that I don't feel comfortable with my family or friends being responsible for my kids, because in the past I have had a situation where a family member watched my child and at the last minute decided they no longer wanted to do that, and I had to quit my job at that time. I currently have been employed for 6 years, and I have been employed for 6 years because I have the stable child care. I feel comfortable leaving my child there, and as a single parent, it's really hard to leave, especially your newborn, with people you're not familiar with, but they made me feel comfortable. And it's amazing to see how much my child is learning in an early childhood center. Every day, he says his ABCs, he says it a little bit better every day. So it really is something that I appreciate that I have, and it's one less stress in my life that I have to worry about, knowing that my child is given proper care, safe care, and I can afford it at this time.
Thank you. Can you tell us where are you from and what center did your children go to?
I live in Minneapolis, and my children go to the Midtown YWCA, and we have been there since June of 2006.
Good. Well, thank you for coming today. We really appreciate it.
I think
next we have, is it Sue? Tonight, Stafsky for the sister here from out of town, from Fergus Falls. I know we have kids in the audience too, so I want to make sure we get you guys up. We'll do you have you up next. Thanks. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. My name is Susan Tenike Stafsky. I am currently the executive director of the only nonprofit child care center in all of Otter Tail County. And if any of you are familiar with that county, it's quite a large county. Within Otter Tail County, again, the center resides in Fergus Falls, Minnesota. And if you're kind of looking at a reference point, Fergus Falls has a little over 13,000 population, about 13,400, I think, is where they're at. And so that's where we're at for population-wise. I'm here also to talk to you about the Child Care Assistance Program and the importance it is to greater Minnesota. And as a Child Care Center Director, I can tell you the direct and certainly the heart impact it would have on the families that I currently serve and that we currently help. Each and every day, I get calls from parents looking for child care. And of the calls, I'm going to say between 50 and 75% of them are saying, do you accept child care assistance programs? My immediate response is always yes, absolutely we do. We have worked with the child care assistance program for years. This center has actually been open and in existence for 38 years. And we certainly have done our best to work with all families that we can help. But when I look at this and when I look at the proposed possible cuts and also the increase in their co-pays, I can envision even more harm that this would do to families, but also to the rural centers that are already currently helping these families. These families right now are already struggling. These are working families. We've got single moms, single dads. We've got grandparents raising children. We've got foster children. We care for just a whole host of family types. We have families coming from other surrounding counties. I serve people from Grant County, from Traverse County, from Cass County. We've got families from all over that are coming. Number one, because, first of all, it's very hard to find quality child care centers in rural Minnesota. And number two, because they're coming our direction to work, and we are the only center available to them. We are a high-quality center, and our teachers are all very well qualified. And the one thing I think that we pride ourselves in is how well we get to know these families and we form such a good relationship with them. And the fact that they can come into my office and sit down and look at me and say, Sue, I cannot afford my copay. I know I owe you money. Now what am I going to do? Don't kick me out. Don't kick my kids out, because if you do, I won't be able to work. And so with that, I have actually had to set up payment plans already for families who are currently making their copay. And even co-pays, as what we would think is as little as $35 every 2 weeks, in our paychecks, it doesn't sound like a lot. But to so many families, it is a lot of money to them. And if we were going to increase that co-pay, I can envision these families, again, also as the last person that testified indicated, looking outside of quality child care for other kind of child care. And that is something I think that would be very sad for all involved. The other examples that I have to share with you are the fact that we already, with what we get for reimbursement, we don't get the full reimbursement of what the actual cost to the parent is. And so on top of their copay, parents are also paying the difference in what we receive as a payment from the county and what we charge. They're paying up to $3.50 a day just to meet how much we charge. Then they're paying a copay on top of that. So by increasing this copay, you're now putting even more stress on a family that's already paying above the copay to meet quality child care standards. And I guess I'm hopefully here as a voice from rural Minnesota to let you know that in a community such as Fergus Falls and in a county such as Otter Tail that hosts 57,000 people, when we are the only licensed child care center there, you can imagine the numbers of families that walk through our door that I'm able to help and to serve. And so I strongly urge this committee, if you're making recommendations, is to make sure that we keep this in mind as we're moving forward. We do not want to see more burdens on our families, and we don't want to see more stress in our centers. There are very few home providers that take the CCAP amounts they do. There are some that do, but by making more of a burden, by having a less reimbursement rate, I can certainly foresee not only centers but home providers looking at that and thinking, you know what, that's probably more work than it's worth, and maybe we just don't want to deal with this anymore. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that that's what could happen as well.
Well, thank you. Is Representative Nornes your representative?
Yes, he is.
Representative Nornes?
Yes.
And thank you for, I know we had discussed on the House floor today that one of your constituents might be here, and I know you're familiar with the Child Care Center and so forth. If you have any comments or...
I was just going to add one thing that I don't think Sue mentioned is the fact that they also have infant care. This is also something that's in very short supply all over, but particularly in rural Minnesota.
Actually, if I can just brag a little bit, thank you for that. We have an infant center that is dedicated to only infants, ages 6 weeks to 16 months. Everything in that center is just for babies. Mm-hmm. And that in where we are today, if you know anything about child care, that is probably in the highest demand and the least amount available to families everywhere.
Well, thank you. Representative Lane has a question. Representative Lane?
I was just curious as to how far your parents might travel to get to your center.
I'm sorry. Thank you for asking that question. Actually, I've got a single mom driving from New Haven to go to college up in our community, and she brings her baby with her. And she comes up during the week and lives and then goes back home on the weekends. And in fact, as a matter of fact, because there was such few spaces available for infant care, for one full week, she couldn't have her baby with her until I could open up a spot for her. Mm-hmm. And so that's as far as they're driving.
Now, how far is New Haven to Fergus Falls?
I think it's in the St. Cloud area, isn't it?
So it would be an
yep.
hour?
Or well, we have several parents that are driving over an hour one direction to come to access child care.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for being here today and
yep.
the time to testify.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Next, we'll ask the family to come down with the kids and let us know how the cuts might affect your family. Members, if you have questions, we do have time for a question or two after each testifier, if you have any questions. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Molly Tuluri, and this is my family. And I'm standing up there saying to myself, why am I bringing two little girls out?
This is the right place to have kids, so
right.
Believe me, you've gone to the right place.
Right.
We need to see kids here at the legislature.
So, the reason why is because when I was asked to talk and share how the increase would affect me, I jumped on it because my husband and I both work full-time. We have a combined annual salary of $50,000. And when I did my budget quickly here on paper, because I forgot to bring it, I looked at it and I saw the only thing that could really come off of it is pay about $100 a month towards my college education and then the internet because I do online learning. And but even with that amount of money, we're in a deficit of $319 each month. And so,
it's okay. We appreciate you sharing how hard it is.
Thank you. My husband works a second job, and so he actually is out of the home minimum of 60 hours a week. That doesn't include transportation. His second job he was able to find in Alexandria, which we live in North Minneapolis, so it's at least 35-minute drive. The rent, utilities, the car, the insurance, the health insurance, food, school lunches, child care, child support. I have a stepdaughter. Diapers and wipes and household expenses and clothing is all at the minimum. Does not include these other things that come up every month, which is why, besides the $319 deficit, he's working an extra job. It's field trips for our two school-age boys, costs of field trips, co-pays for health insurance, birthdays. My son plays sports, the minimum of $75 with scholarships in Minneapolis to have them go to sports and be a part of that. My son's clarinet broke, and there's a cost at the beginning of the year, and then there's a cost to replace if it breaks, and so that was an additional $40 that comes out of where we have to move and shift, and we use a credit card. I took out a student loan. And I want to mention that I also work, we represent the YWCA in Minneapolis downtown at Abbott Hospital, and I also work there. And to stay in my field and working with kids, which is what I'm passionate about, I'm continuing my education because it will give me not only more to offer to the children and the families, but also a pay increase. And I'm a lead teacher, so right now I'm at the maximum of what I can earn without having a BA, and I have a two-year. So there's no reason why I would choose to be in school with two young children except for that I cannot afford not to be. So the way that the increase would affect my family is that my husband would have to work more. And that's a person that's very heavy. So I urge you to vote against that increase.
Well, thank you for being here today. I think we very much appreciate you coming down, and we realize it is very hard out there. And if the governor wants to both increase your copay as a parent and potentially have you get less money, so I think both those things would be very difficult. Do you think?
Yes.
You're letting us know. So thank you. I think we better let you run. We appreciate you being here. Thank you. Next, is it Carol? Next. My kids, as I called, it's so great having this committee after school because my kids are home and they had broken the remote, so you can imagine it's chaos at home right now. They'll have to go, we have more than one TV, but it's still, when you have kids in here, trying to work childcare and working, it's always something. So we appreciate you being here. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
How do you get? My name is Carol Patrick-Tacos. I have two children in care at the YWCA where Molly works, and the reason I'm so moved by what she had to say is because she takes care of my kids, and now I can understand what her life looks like more, even though we have gotten fairly close over the last 2.5 years. But I'm also a single working mom. I have full custody of my children, and I do very meaningful work, in my opinion, but unfortunately, I'm not self-sufficient. My children benefit from Minnesota Care. They're privileged to have access to exceptional health care, and they benefit from child care assistance, and I'm privileged to have them enrolled at the Y. They've been there since my daughter turned 3 months old. My kids were the first kids enrolled on the first day it opened, and it's 2 blocks from my home, so it's helped me simplify my life in such a meaningful way in that I don't put my kids in a car, so now I can bus, which I do to save. And I experienced looking for high quality child care, and some of the ones that I identified when I was looking for child care did not take CCA, and that's why the Y was so attractive to me. It has many of my priorities, which is safety, low staff turnover, and
high quality programming like early literacy and a lot of big motor skills in the gym that's important. And I can see a clear correlation between a 3% knock to what the daycares are paid and strengths like that diminishing, such as staff turnover, access to outside people and outside field trips that have influence on children's interests and development, and food especially. And that's my concern, is that it bothers me very much that I'm not self-sufficient. And yet, I don't think it's about me. I think it's about my kids and my kids' peers, children all over Minneapolis having access to high-quality early childhood education so that they are on the fast track to college. And we eliminate this disparity for people like myself. I mean, I'm near poor. I make enough monthly to meet my children's needs, but they have no college fund. And I'm not getting a raise this year. We're not getting a bonus because for the first time our nonprofit's doesn't have a budget surplus. And so with rising costs everywhere else in my budget, I don't see how I could accommodate more challenges like needing to find different high-quality child care.
Thank you. Are there any questions? We appreciate you being here, and it's important for us as members to hear how the cuts might affect you and your family. So we very much appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, next we have, I don't know if Todd Otis came, if you want to come down, and Cisa Keller, Katie Chase, and Penny Shepherd. Welcome to the committee. You know, we called on you earlier.
I know. I feel very bad about that. I was on the freeway.
Okay. Well, we understand. Thank you. We're glad you're here. And welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
My name is Todd Otis. I'm president of Ready for K, Early Childhood Advocacy and Policy Organization. I'll just say a couple of words. The people that have just testified are probably the best, most eloquent advocates of what's really happening. And I just wanted to add a little bit to the quality of the YWCA. The people that you just heard from have their kids or are involved in the YWCA program, where they have about 100% school readiness in terms of the assessment done on the kids. So it's a really quality program with really challenged families, many of them. And I just think that's important because it really is an investment that pays off. And so I guess the only other things I would want to add to what's been said is, in terms of the larger physical picture, we're moving in the right direction, but we're not moving fast enough. In 2003, early childhood, as we understand it, took 15% of the total cuts that the legislature and the governor had in that fiscal crisis. Now we're at a lower percentage, which is progress. And just last week, as you know, there was a summit on early childhood, which showed enormous support and enthusiasm on the part of the legislators and representative of the administration. So I really hope what the governor's budget is the basement, the floor. We don't cut anything below where he is in terms of net total dollars for little kids. And I really think the dollars, compared to the size of the budget, are such that you could restore to no cuts without having it be unrealistic. And, of course, as we've said to you before, we believe that 1% of the state budget for kids at this age in their life and their development and their critical role in terms of success in K-12, we need to be spending more when we can get in a stronger physical condition. So I appreciate a couple of aspects of where the governor's budget is apparently trying to go. He's trying to maintain an orientation toward quality by extending the second year of the quality rating system and also extending the School Readiness Connections program. But it is also the case that he's, I don't want to say invading, but going into the base of the existing core funding for the program. So we think it's very possible to do what needs to be done at not an exorbitant rate. The payoff is high. The impact on daily life for families has been said so much more eloquently just now than anything I could ever say. But I just hope you'll be fierce advocates for no cuts and continued advocates for putting this in the whole kind of conceptual frame of education, and that the kind of quality that we just saw in the programs that those kids are going through that get them ready for K could be supported at adequate levels to do the job. With that, I'll just wrap up.
Okay, thank you. And members, as you know, we're hearing the feedback on the governor's budget proposal. The House will also be putting a budget together. The Senate will also be putting a budget together. So we will have our chance to also come out with a proposal eventually. But right now, it's very important for here to hear your reactions to what the budget recommendations by the governor are. Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Otis, why don't you want to say invading?
It sounds so militaristic. I mean, it's like, I guess you can use that word, but it's pretty loaded. I mean, so the words I use, I'll just try to be careful.
You know, Representative Grayling, when we were kids, we talk in this, when we do introductions to this committee, everybody has to talk about their favorite childhood game, and one of my favorite childhood games was Steal the Bacon. Do you remember that game? You put it out in the middle, and then everybody, you run to see who can grab it first, and then sometimes it feels a little bit like that around here. Those are funds, the underspent funds feel like they're up for grabs, and invading up for grabs, and where should they be, I think is a worthy debate that we will be having. Oh, thank you. Thank you. If you'd like to, welcome the committee, if you'd like to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
And members of the committee, my name is Cisa Keller. I'm the Director of Advocacy and Government Relations for New Horizon Academy. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Child Care Association. The Minnesota Child Care Association is a group of almost 300 licensed child care facilities throughout the state of Minnesota. Today, I hope to continue the momentum that started last week at the Early Childhood Summit. David Lawrence presented a challenge we need to accept to ensure that all of Minnesota's young children and their families have access to high-quality, affordable early childhood settings. I would like to talk to you about the governor's budget proposal for cutting $10.3 million and what it would look like in our child care centers. The governor's proposed cuts are short-sighted. While they may appear to help balance the budget in the short term, it perpetuates what Minnesota is currently dealing with, a choice not to pay now so you have to pay later scenario. The governor has proposed three items we are concerned about. The first is a 3% decrease in the Child Care Assistance Program reimbursement rate. The Child Care Assistance Program rate was slashed in 2003. While we have made some very modest increases since then, we have not returned to what the reimbursement rates as they were before 2003. The current reimbursement rates are significantly low, below the market rate. I've actually provided a handout. This is the one with the red on it. And this handout details what the market rates are of a child care center in downtown St. Paul that is nationally accredited. It also has what the proposed reimbursement rates would be. The differences between the market rates and the Child Care Assistance Program reimbursement rates must be managed in one of two ways. Either the child care center has to absorb these costs, or they have to pass them along to the families. In the current economic times, licensed child care centers will have no other option but to pass these costs on to the families. With a 3% decrease in Child Care Assistance Program reimbursement rates, monthly costs for a family with an infant and a preschooler at this center would increase from $118 to $184. That's a 56% increase in out-of-pocket expenses. The proposed cuts effectively limit a family's access to high-quality experiences necessary for each child, experiences each child equally deserves. The second item on the governor's budget proposal I would like to address is the 3% increase in family co-pays. I'll use the same family to show the effect of this proposal. This family currently has a $100 per week co-pay. The increase would result in an increase from $400 per month to $412. While this increase does not appear to be as significant, I would like to remind you that this family is utilizing the Child Care Assistance Program because they are already financially strapped. So therefore, any increase would be significant. If you have both a decrease in child care assistance program reimbursement rates and an increase in the co-pays, this family's cost would increase from $6,616 per year to $7,567 per year. One thing I'd like to point out about this fact is that even though the individual cuts are 3%, collectively they would become a 14% increase on this family. These significant increases in a family's monthly costs are coming at a time when many workers are seeing wage freezes as well as a reduction in benefits. The cuts proposed are potentially harmful for young children and their families. With an increase in co-pays and a decrease in reimbursement rates, families will be forced to put their young children in potentially harmful situations. Studies show that it's high-quality early childhood programs that have the highest return on investment that people like Art Rolnick have talked about. It is exactly these programs that the families are now going to have limited access to as a result of these proposed cuts. From a business standpoint, these proposed cuts are also going to put the child care field in a similar situation as 2003, where many child care businesses will see staff reductions, thus more unemployed Minnesotans, and potentially closing their doors. The third and final item on the governor's budget proposal I'd like to address here is the increase in licensing fees. While we oppose any increase in fees because these costs will have to be readjusted somewhere else, our biggest opposition is to the effectiveness of this particular cut. Based on the testimony we heard on Tuesday, these proposed increase in licensing fees to child care businesses would result in a loss of federal dollars. This is short-sighted and appears to me to be one more practice of shifting money around and relying on user fees to balance the budget. The governor's budget proposal erodes the basic quality Minnesota's early childhood system is built on. These cuts should be seen at the bottom line, as Todd mentioned. I believe that the House and the Senate can do better by the young children of Minnesota. I would like to sum up my testimony today by adding on to David Lawrence's speech. We are Minnesotans. We do value our young children and their families, and we can do better. It is in these economic times that we must look long-term and see where the best investment is, not only for now, but for the future. That is the that answer is the early childhood care and education. Thank you.
Thank you, and I appreciate your testimony. Any questions? Representative Ward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I apologize for coming late because I had a constituent in my office, and I apologize for all of you for missing the first part.
You
talked about the increase in copay as well as the reduction in CCAP. Do you have any figures as to equal about 14%? I thought you said as a significant 14% to families at that point. Do you have any figures that indicate about approximately how many child care families that impacts, both of those, the CCAP as well as the reduction, increase in copay?
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, I can't give you statewide numbers. I could give you more specifically to the center in downtown St. Paul. I'm very familiar with that center. I actually was the director there for 8 years. At that center, we have about 32% of families that are on child care assistance. Every single one of them have a copay, and we do charge the full difference. So every single one of those families would be affected by this.
Representative Ward?
Do you think that would be indicative of statewide numbers as well? 32% is huge.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Ward, I don't know that I could give a good figure on that, but I certainly could get back to you as to what that figure would be.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Representative Downing?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. You referenced a 10% cut, and I'm sorry, I'm looking at some budget sheets here that may not correlate to what you were referencing. Where do you see the 10% cut? Is it a program, or are you referring to something overall?
Ms. Allen?
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe I meant to say 3%. 3% cut to reimbursement rates.
Thank you. Yeah, sorry. Just a follow-up. It's probably for both of you, I guess. You know, one of the things we're trying to evaluate as you look at the state of Minnesota overall and the hit we've all taken financially and the concept that the state needs to, you know, share in that to a certain extent. And so, you know, it would be nice to just say, well, nothing should be cut and we should all get great increases. But I'm curious, as you look at it from your perspective, you know, if you had to take a balance of kind of cuts or relative raises between the K-12 environment and the early childhood, do you have a sense for, you know, kind of where that balance should come out. Should it be equal? Should we be favoring early childhood from your perspective based in terms of where you see the benefits?
Mr. Otis?
Yeah, the way I would answer that is, it would, in my dream world, the legislature and the governor would start with a blank slate, talk to each other seriously about their priorities, and then fund the budget based on their priorities. This has been an exercise that's happened in other states, South Carolina, Washington, Iowa, Michigan. So if we went through a process like that in Minnesota, I'll take my chances with how it all comes down. In other states, for example, in the state of Iowa, Governor Vilsack at that time went through this exercise and came back to the consultants that he was working with and said early childhood should be $1. But that isn't the only part of the picture. My guess would be that if the legislature and the governor went through that exercise, there'd be results that this committee and the K-12 committee would like. I'm not going to get into the business of saying one or the other is more valuable. It's a continuum. This is the foundation. It really is foundational. But I'd love to see that kind of priority setting occur, because I think given this crisis and given the magnitude of the problem, it's an opportunity to say, hey, what is really the most important part of our future economically? And I think if we did that, you'd see both committees doing better.
I'll second his. Well,
thank you for being here today. Oh, Representative Hamilton?
That is a very valuable comment, because if everything's a priority, nothing's a priority. So, you know, we should do something like that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Keller, can you give us a brief preview of the tour on Tuesday?
Absolutely. So you guys are welcome, or you're invited to come to our center up on Rice Street. It just opened at the end of September, and it is actually completely full. We have completely filled the center. It's one of the only licensed quality child care centers in the area, and it is children that are both on the allowance, the MELF scholarship programs, as well as the pre-K allowance programs. And it is also a provisionally rated parent aware center. So we'll be able to talk about pretty much every one of these issues at that center, and you'll be able to see how it plays out in the classroom. So.
Well, thank you. And members, we're still looking for drivers. The plan is right now just meet here, and we'll, or you'll get an email and where we'll meet. But we'll look forward to seeing you on Tuesday. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Katie Chase and Penny Shepherd. Who would like to go first? Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record.
Katie Chase. Madam Chair and members of the committee, first of all, I'd like to say it's been an honor to listen to all of the testimony previous to mine. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you about the impact the governor's proposed budget cut to the child care assistance program will have on child care providers. I'm Katie Chase, Executive Director of the Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association, also known as MOFCCA. I have with me Penny Shepherd, one of our family provider members, who will speak as a provider herself. MOFCCA is a professional family child care organization of licensed family child care providers serving children and providers. Our mission is to support the highest standard of care for children in licensed family child care homes through education, resources, recognition, and advocacy, while acknowledging the diversity of licensed family child care providers. The Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association provides the infrastructure for all of our statewide county associations and neighborhood groups to meet during quarterly board meetings, and we are the link for these providers to the National Family Child Care Association. To begin, I believe it is important to understand that each family child care provider actually represents a small business in Minnesota. There are 12,000 family child care business owners in Minnesota. These providers care for 187,000 children, which is slightly more than half of all children cared for in licensed care in Minnesota. I gave you a handout with these figures. The child care and education industry in Minnesota has gross receipts of well over $900 million. That's second only to the corn and hotel industry, far above the telecommunications industry in Minnesota. Besides the tax revenue this industry provides itself to Minnesota, it's the industry that allows other workers in all other jobs the ability to work by providing care and education for their children. They purchase food, equipment, and business services that keep so many tax revenue industries alive as well. Cutting the child care and assistant program results in family providers losing families who can no longer afford their co-pays. Family child care businesses will flounder or shut their doors entirely. The state loses its much-needed business tax revenues. I have already been hearing from providers around the state that they have or will shut their doors due to families losing jobs. This cut will further that downward spiral, making families that are still working unable to provide care for their children. Cutting the child care assistance program will directly decrease child care and education access for working families, raising the co-pay for parents and increasing the waiting list for families seeking assistance results in many parents making the decision not to work at all because they can't afford the cost of care. What happens then? Minnesota loses more tax revenue and families look for more expensive assistance programs and the cost to the state is even higher. Or worse, these families may continue working and place their children in unsafe situations while they work. Please consider how to keep people working. This is what Minnesota needs. Look at increasing revenue by maintaining and creating jobs, not by cutting the programs that allow workers to work. Beyond economic impact, the economic impact of this decision, the most important consideration is the impact on children. Providers cannot keep children whose parents cannot pay their bills. No business can function without income. These children often get bounced from provider to provider once it is seen that they will not be paying their co-pays. This already happens. It will increase if these cuts are passed. We know continuity of care is crucial to quality. Continuity of care is what is so unique about family child care. The same person always takes care of your child. They're there in the morning and they're there in the evening. How can we begin to talk about quality if we are not supporting the base that allows access for low-income families to even have care? To recap, if the child care assistance program is cut, a major Minnesota industry, 12,000 small business owners of family child care businesses, will be negatively affected, potentially resulting in less child care options for working parents, as well as a loss of tax revenue to Minnesota. Other industries will suffer as access to child care for workers decreases. Working families will suffer as more and more of them will not be able to afford child care. Most importantly, children, 187,000 are in licensed family child care, will suffer as they lose continuity of care and the base for child care quality access. The result, the negative impact on school readiness and our future workforce, and potential stress for the most vulnerable children.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Penny Shepherd, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm very honored to be here today representing the family child cares around the state. I've been in business for 8 years in Minnesota. I have a full-time employee that works for me, which has allowed me to be here today. Otherwise, I'd still be working also, caring for the children. Most providers are unable to attend these kind of proceedings because of the hours that they provide care. I currently have a bachelor's degree in business, and I'm in my last year at Metro State pursuing a degree in the Urban Teach program. And the expectations today of the state and parents looking for child care, they demand a higher quality of care, which in turn has had the providers go out searching for the education and resources available for them. The children that are in our care are actually there because the parents are working and paying taxes. The family child care providers are actually small businesses that create tax revenues, and the child care assistance program allows the families to work in lower paying positions. I pride myself in providing a high quality of care for the families I service. But in the past year, due to the economy crisis, I've lost two families, which account for four less children in my care. The fathers are both at-home dads now, who used to work in the construction field. This has accounts for a 40% loss in my revenues over the last 3 months. Most of my business expenses remain constant. My employee salaries, supplies, curriculum, mortgage payments, electrical bills. But a drop in revenues means I will be paying less taxes, not to mention the impact on the children having to leave their friends, extended family, and the continuity of care. It also means parents will be utilizing cheaper, unqualified forms of care. Parents currently on child care assistance have gone through severe hardships to the constant cuts in funding for this program. The last cut we had in the reform, I lost two families accounting for 50% of my revenues. One of the families, the mother worked at a gas station and the father worked for Jiffy Lube. They had three children, 9 months, 3 years, and 6 years. Their copay was only $52 a month, but after the reform, it jumped to $463. They were unable to stay in care. The family ended up better off financially by the mother quitting her job and no longer working. A 3% increase in a family's copay doesn't sound like a lot to a middle-class or upper-class family, but it could mean the difference to a lower-class family of the difference of buying a gallon of milk or serving their kids Kool-Aid for dinner. Children from lower-income families are already at great risk, and raising the copay 3% means parents are going to be forced to choose the Kool-Aid, which in turn means the children's health is also being put at risk. And by allowing the governor to raise the copay for families on child care assistance, it is not only detrimental to the families utilizing the program, but also to the community at large. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Downey?
Yes, thank you very much. Really helpful perspective in terms of kind of the picture you painted of family child care as micro or small businesses. Thank you for that. And I know this is maybe slightly off topic relative to the potential budget cutting scenario, but I'm curious, we're also evaluating the possible rollout of a quality rating system, and I'm just curious if you could give us a very quick perspective on whether that's an extremely costly proposal for you folks and perhaps ill-timed. We're trying to decide on the timing and the scope of the rollout of something like that.
Okay.
I would never say that a quality rating system is ill-timed. We completely support any work towards quality, and I'm actually personally very involved with the quality rating system work in Parent Aware. I trained for Department of Human Services for Parent Aware. The concern, as I think Todd Otis alluded to also, is that we're, and you didn't want him to use the word invading the base. If we don't have access for low-income children to have any care at all, what do we do with quality? Quality is so important, but it's sort of like Maslow's hierarchy, you know? You have to have food and water before you can move up. And I think it should all be done simultaneously in my dream world, absolutely. I want it all right now. I'm not going to pit myself against Parent Aware by any means. That's an excellent, excellent program. But we have to look at getting children into care, period, affordable care. That's kind of the base.
Mm-hmm. Representative Fine.
Thank you, Chairman. Ms. Shepherd, you mentioned the Urban Teach program.
Mm-hmm.
Could you feel a bit more about that and how that's been either helpful to you or not?
It's been very helpful. Actually, Katie was quite involved with the Teach program a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
How it works is the Urban Teach program pays 80% of my schooling at Metro State. I pay 20%. They also pay 80% of my books, and I pay 20%. I also receive a stipend for my assistant, where I can take off and go study or do work, whatever is needed for my time.
Thank you. Well, thank you for your testimony. We have about 25 more minutes. We're going to have to move forward. We appreciate you being here today. Next, we'll have Sharna Brock, from the YMCA, Elaine Keefe from the YMCA, and kind of on deck is Ruth Kruger and Laura LaCroix DeLune. Welcome to the committee. Mm-hmm. Let's go first to it. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Sharna Brock, and thank you for allowing me to speak with you today. I am here representing the children and families throughout the state of Minnesota that depend on the YMCA for their child care safety. I will focus my remarks on the proposal to cut 3% from the child care rate pay to providers, coupled with the proposal to increase the participant copay by 3%, which will potentially devastate the families and communities the YMCA serves. I'm hopeful that by the end of my testimony, you will see how this cut will severely impact the lives of the children and families in Minnesota and could potentially lead to the closing of YMCA child care programs. Let me start by telling you a little bit about the YMCA. We are the largest not-for-profit child care provider in the United States. The YMCA strives to build strong kids, strong families, and strong communities. The Y cares for children in a variety of programs. Full-day care for infants, toddlers, and preschoolers, partial and full-day preschool programs, before and after-school programs, and summer programs for all ages that give parents flexibility of part-time or full-time opportunities. Over 20,000 children are served in YMCA child care programs in this state. Parents look to the YMCA for a safe and nurturing environment for their children, in addition to a strong curriculum that prepares them for the future. The Y experience is centered on values: caring, honesty, respect, and responsibility. These are the components that the YMCA has embraced for the last 150 years and what has made the YMCA a leader among child care providers. 12% of the families we currently serve are recipients of child care assistance funding. These families depend on that funding. It makes it possible for them to have safe, high-quality, and nurturing care for their children so that they can work or go to school to build a future and improve their family's life. That was your intent when you so wisely created this funding source for families in need. With that decision, you made it possible for parents who are not as fortunate as others financially to be able to receive the same quality of care that their financial limits would not limit their child's learning or safety. With the budget proposal to cut the rate of pay to providers by 3% and increase the parent copays by 3%, you are creating an unfair playing field for these families. Child care providers will simply make the decision not to accept these families. What will happen to these children and families? Will children be left alone in the care of siblings? Perhaps they'll be left in the car while mom goes to her shift. This proposed cut will eliminate already limited options for parents when it comes to the care for their child. Why would any child care provider enroll children whose families rely on state funding for care when they know they will be paid less than the actual cost of that care? You could mandate that providers must give access to these families, but then you would need to put in regulations and monitoring, all at additional cost with no improvement to the care. For the YMCA, it is our mission to not turn families away due to financial status. By continuing to accept these families at the lower rate, the YMCA loses over $400,000, a loss we simply cannot absorb. Some of our programs are in lower income areas in desperate need of quality care. How would you suggest those programs absorb these kinds of cuts to an already tight budget? These cuts will lead to the closing of those centers, leaving few, if any, options to those parents. Next, I would like to address the trend we are seeing with the participant copays. Many families cannot afford to pay the current copay. At the YMCA, we provide scholarships or financial assistance to those families to help them cover the cost of their copays. In 2008, the YMCAs in Minnesota awarded over $911,000 in financial assistance to families so that they may receive quality care for their child. Currently, over 2,000 families the YMCA serves are receiving YMCA financial assistance over and above their state support. This is a massive financial hit to the Y. Our latest numbers show that over the last 4 months, we are awarding in excess of 20% more scholarships to families in need. We expect record levels of assistance being requested in 2009. By increasing the parent copay, what you are really doing is increasing the amount the YMCA will need to cover with financial assistance. YMCA volunteers in your communities are working hard to solicit donations to help in these circumstances. But again, we are expecting 2009 to be a difficult fundraising year as well. That leads to my last point, that much of what cannot be covered by government funding or scholarships is written off in bad debt. Bad debt is a loss to the YMCA. These are accounts where families were unable to pay for the services they had received. The highest percentage of families who incur these bad debts are those families receiving financial assistance. This is because those dollars are limited, and so the copay is often not realistic for their family's budget. But the scales are set so that more families can receive funding. Last year, the YMCAs in Minnesota incurred $303,000 in bad debt. This is a direct loss of revenue for the program and must be absorbed by the organization in some way. We do not expect this number to decrease in 2009. I know that you care about the children and families in your districts, just as the YMCA does, and that you have some very difficult decisions ahead of you. But I implore you to put the future of our children and our state at the top of your priority list, and not consider the proposal before you to decrease child care assistance funding and increase participant copays. Child care has gone without appropriate funding for years, and to reduce what funding there is would be a travesty to this profession and to our state's children. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about the YMCA's passion for caring for children and our commitment to our families and communities. I hope I have made the case for you that this proposed budget cut has no wins. Our children lose, our families lose, and our communities lose. And as a state, we are severely weakened. Thank you.
Thank you. And just to clarify, of course, it's the governor's budget proposal, and the House will be making one, and typically we would have some testimony on that as well. So maybe we'll get to see what your reaction to that is. Thank you for being here today, Ms. O'Keefe. Will you state your name? Keefe, not O'Keefe. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Elaine Keefe, and I'm also here representing the 49 YMCAs across the state of Minnesota. And I'll be very brief. I think Ms. Rock covered things very nicely. I just want to stress that the YMCA is a nonprofit charitable organization, and we try very, very hard to provide financial assistance to all of the families that need it in order to participate in our program. And we're having an increasingly difficult time meeting that skyrocketing need. And the governor's proposed cut to child care is going to make our challenge that much more difficult. And these cuts are going to do real harm to the most vulnerable families that we serve. So we ask you to do whatever you can to avoid making these cuts in child care assistance. And I also want to add that we also urge you to try to find a way to fund the after-school programs. Laura LaCroix-DeLoon is on your agenda a little later on from Youth Community Connections. We're working very closely with them on trying to get some funding for after-school programs. So I won't talk in detail about that, but I did want to let you know that that is also a priority for the YMCA. There are too many kids who do not have access to high-quality, safe, positive environments after school, and that's very, very important as well. We know you have challenges ahead of you, and we look forward to working with you on that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We do have a question, Representative Ward, then Representative Downey. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In my former life, I was able to work with the YMCA child care facility back in Brainerd, and was always amazed at things that were accomplished there. And one of my granddaughters goes there right now, and she said, called me the other day and said, "Grandpa, listen to what I can say." And she recited the Pledge of Allegiance verbatim, better than I've heard most adults do it. And so it's amazing what your facilities do. So do you have a let me just ask this on a sideline. Do you have a statewide curriculum in your child care program? You can answer that when I ask this main question, Ms. Brock. You had indicated $303,000 debt from the Y statewide. My Y director was just here, and he talked to me about the amount of debt that they had received in our community based on providing memberships for families that can't buy them and other things. Was this just the $303,000? Was that just child care related, or was it total debt, you know, for providing lots of different things that the Y provides?
Ms. Brown,
thank you. It was just child care debt.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, almost the same question. I was curious, and I apologize for not knowing how the Y or another non-for-profit would manage this, but do you reserve for bad debt, or does that $303,000 just comes straight up as an expense off of your budget?
Ms. Frost?
Thank you. We do plan for some bad debt, but certainly not to this amount.
Yeah.
This year was astronomical, and we expect now we will try to budget for next year to be more, but already in 2009 we're unprepared for the amount that we think we're going to see.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have a couple more testifiers. I would like, and to all the testifiers, do you have a copy of your testimony, if we could have that to share with the committee? I think we'd very much appreciate that. So,
thank you.
Ruth Kruger, and then Laura LaCroix DeLune, and then we're going to last have Steve Kerr, who wanted to have a reaction or a response to Arthur Reynolds' testimony from the other day. Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Ruth Kruger. I'm the Employment and Economic Assistance Director for Dakota County. That's a long way of saying the Welfare Director. I'm here today actually representing MACSA. That's the County Social Service Administrators Association. And I chair the Early Childhood Committee for that. I'm here to speak in favor of a portion of the governor's budget proposal, limiting retroactive child care assistance eligibility for MFIP child care recipients. MACSA and the Department of Human Services staff actually jointly sit on this Early Childhood Committee, and we brainstorm about things that would make the programs work better. This is both licensing and child care assistance. And one of our member counties brought forward the problems that we have with MFIP recipients when they want to go retroactive on their child care. It's the only aspect of child care assistance that you can go retroactive on. Basic sliding fee is the date of application. Transition year, those are much more tightly controlled. But on MFIP, you can go retroactive to the date you went on MFIP. So I have 3 points to make on that. Recipient responsibility. MFIP recipients are informed, usually both by their financial worker and their employment counselor, that they need to apply for child care if they are in an activity for which we can authorize child care, and that's working and job search, school, etc. They have to have an authorized plan. You can actually get child care if you're working or if you're job search without an authorized plan. But everything else takes an employment counselor authorized plan. Accurate grants. You can imagine if you're trying to go back more than 6 months, how memories get vague, paperwork gets lost. This is not a loosely run program. We need documentation in order to do correct grants. And we worry a lot about losing child care assistance if the public gets the opinion that we're not careful with their dollars. And finally, a program simplification. You know what's going on in government right now. Most counties are under a hiring freeze. I can certainly tell you Dakota is. Hiring freeze may be the least of what we have to face. And in this recession, caseloads are going up. All across are going up. All across the board. So let me give you examples. It may sound like a really nice thing to let people go retroactive if they haven't understood that they needed to apply, but it's not that simple. The worker must verify the participant's past work schedule, income received, and the amount of unauthorized child care that was used for the full retro time. That could be a year. The longest I've heard is 2 years. They didn't work one job during that period. They tend to bounce between some temporary type jobs, trying to locate everybody. They didn't use just one provider during that time period. They tend to use legally unlicensed providers, but they need a background check before you can start paying them. So if you aren't clear what all the steps are, you can't authorize the child care for that time. And right now, the new child care computer system, MEC Squared, doesn't make retro payments, so we have to do all of that manually. There's disputes that we get into between the client and the provider about the amount of payment because it wasn't prior authorized, and so we're trying to mediate disputes between the provider and the client. Similar issues for transition year, et cetera. It would be so much cleaner, use less staff time, have less frustration when the provider who thinks they're going to be paid is new to the child care system and doesn't know that there hasn't been authorization. So we really would encourage you to do that. I'm almost afraid to say the next step, but I have spent 20 years trying to make sure that Dakota County spends every dime of its basic sliding fee child care allocation, and I spend a lot of time with other county staff who are having the same problem. So if you have time, I certainly would try to explain a little bit about how the basic sliding fee allocation system works and why you find unspent money at the end of the year.
I appreciate the offer. It's about 10 to 6, and this committee gets done at 6, and these members have often their families or other obligations waiting for them.
Well, I lucked out.
I think that I think we'll take a rain check on that idea. I think that we will be hearing more about the basic sliding fee and the waiting lists and what's happening. It's something that is very complex that we do need some help to understand. So how about we do that another time?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee, if you'd like to proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Laura LaCroix-DeLune, and I'm the Executive Director of Youth Community Connections. And we're Minnesota's statewide after-school network, working with stakeholders, both public and private funders, as well as the direct service providers of after-school and out-of-school time. And I'm here today to ask for your support for the after-school community learning grants, which were not part of the governor's budget this year. And the after-school community grant program was funded in 2007 for $5.3 million. So we've just completed the first year of these grants. Nearly 9,000 kids were served at an average cost of about $300 per participant. And then each community member, or for each organization, they leveraged an additional $200 per participant in community resources. So we're doing, kids are getting these kinds of after-school and summer learning opportunities for a fairly reasonable price to the community at large. Some of these programs charge fees, and some of them offer them free to the participants based on need in their community. The after-school grants, as I said, were funded in 2007, and it was the first time the state had refunded after-school programs since 2003, the last time we hit a major budget deficit. The state after-school enrichment dollars were unallotted, and programs were shut down, and we estimate over 160,000 to 170,000 kids went without services. And we were beginning to make some ground in 2007, opening the doors to more kids and families, and are now faced with the same situation that we were faced back in 2003, where we might be closing the doors to kids and families again. And as you've heard from many of the providers around the room today, the need doesn't stop once the child enters the school room, and that we still have these ongoing needs to help kids in the after-school and summer hours. Let me just briefly talk about some of the supports that are happening. This grant program focuses on two key areas, and it focuses on supporting core academic achievements, so it helps their learning in the classroom. These programs are focusing on anything from science and math to STEM activities, but it's a chance for kids to do applied learning, to take what they learned in the classroom, what they learn at home, and apply it. Make mistakes, learn from their mistakes, move on. And that's what we know has also helped contribute to their grades and test scores. The other focus area of many of these programs is helping kids prepare and launch for life. And these are the kinds of activities that help kids engaged in school. It's helping increase graduation rates, increasing attendance rates. The funds that were available in 2007 didn't meet the need. It was an important step forward for the state. And I think it's important for you to know that while there was $5.3 million available, the Department of Education received nearly $60 million in requests. And there were 241 applications that came in seeking for help and support or opportunities for the kids in the communities, and 21 were awarded. So we hope that the dollar amount of $5.3 million doesn't dissuade you from understanding the need that's out there from the working families. And I'll just finish up by saying that supporting these opportunities for kids will really help reduce the achievement gap that we've been struggling with in this state. We have really strong data, and because of time, I can meet with you individually, we can talk about this in the committee, but we can really chip away at the achievement gap when kids have opportunities to learn and apply their learning either after school or in the summer. Additionally, it increases graduation rates, which we know we need kids to be graduating. And finally, it supports working families. Without these programs, families can't work, and we've been working with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce on a separate project, not on funding, but in working with local communities, because productivity goes down in the after-school hours. They need to keep people on task as much as possible, and so we've begun to have a partnership with them because they've recognized the need that these kinds of opportunities, whether they're in the summer or in the school year, really help support their staff.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Mack, and if Mr. Kerr can make his way down.
I just had a brief question. You said that when you had to close your doors, about 160,000 to 170,000 kids were affected by that. Do you have any gauge or idea of, were those kids absorbed into other programs, into child care facilities? Were they left at home? Do you have any gauge of what the impact is or where they went when those doors were closed?
Ms. McCoy, Linda Bloom.
Yes. Madam Chair, members, it is our understanding that it was a variety of reactions that happened. Some families who had resources found other programs. Many of the after-school enrichment dollars were really targeted towards communities with high need, higher poverty. And so what we did see, based on a Department of Human Service survey, is that we saw a 46% increase of children ages 10 to 12 going home alone unattended from that time. And what we hear anecdotally from service providers is that our 10 to 12-year-old kids are going home and taking care of their younger siblings because they don't have the resources to even take care of younger siblings. So we know that that's a piece of it, and then also that we've seen people just helping out with neighbors. So some of that can be absorbed, but most of it has not been.
Question. Thank you. Well, thank you for being here today. I'm sure we'll have a further discussion about after-school programs as well. Well, Mr. Kerr, let's see. We have about 4 minutes.
Representative Flawick, I'm planning in about 90 seconds, so if any left, I can get
perfect. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record.
Representative Flawick, my name is Steve Kerr. I'm the Community Education Director for Anoka-Hennepin and representing the Minnesota Community Ed Association. Dr. Reynolds presented some excellent information last week. There was one statement that left a troubling remnant in the mind of our members, and I wanted to at least try to respond to that. I believe in part of Dr. Reynolds' testimony, he talked about that there was a need to reduce school readiness, that it lacked both the quality indicators and the accountability for the program. I believe Dr. Reynolds was referring to the statute and not the program per se, and as a reminder to members that the current statute does require approved school readiness programs that are part of the public school system to submit a biannual report to the Minnesota Department of Education for approval. And many of the quality indicators that Dr. Reynolds identified in his communication to you are embedded in that biennial report. On a secondary level, each of those programs are required to report on an annual basis to the Department of Education their participation, as well as a matrix of other information that the department requires from us. That's it, Madam Chair.
Any questions, members? I think we'll probably be having a future discussions about school readiness as well. Well, good. Well, thank you, members. Remember, watch your email for the visit on Tuesday. If a couple of you can drive, it would certainly help out. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.